we talk about tuition waivers for veterans.
Oh, I told them.
We have to give them any money. We can, they can do that.
You gotta move towards providing a free for everyone.
What are we talking about?
But I mean, if we have a bill, I mean, I can condition waivers for veterans, but only money, so that we can afford to pay for it.
Hey, Greg, we're talking till about 5.
I have one minute.
Representative Kelly, you have something you'd like to say to the, for the veterans?
No, I'm looking for your name, that you're all over here.
Hi, Jerry.
Somebody lives here, I think. Somebody or something lives here.
Ooh.
Or Lance is the picture.
You're supposed to be right there.
It says Pollard right there.
Oh.
It's freaking cover it up.
Can you entertain us with stories? Stories can entertain us?
Oh, we do, I do.
It's up to you.
I manage them.
You wanna remain anonymous?
Yeah. I'm not gonna believe that.
We'll call the meeting to order of the Legislative Audit and Fiscal Review Committee, and I thank everyone for coming this afternoon. We're gonna try to get this meeting wrapped up by 4 o'clock. There are conference committees that have to be going on, so we'll have the clerk call the roll and get right into our agenda.
Chairman Crate?
Here.
Belter?
Here.
Delver? Lucasberg?
Here.
Havelstead?
Here.
Kelch?
Here.
Kaepernick?
Here.
Maragos?
Here.
Marinson? Mack?
Here.
Nelson?
Here.
Pollard? Ruby?
Here.
Schmidt? Scarpa?
Here.
Travier?
Here.
Senator Kelzer?
Here.
Lee? O'Connell?
They just walked in.
And Manzik? Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum?
Okay. Thank you. We'll consider the minutes from the last meeting on October 2nd and on January 29th of 2015. I did take the time to look at them, and I don't know if anybody has any comments or additions or corrections. If there are none, a motion to accept would be in order. Representative Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So move the adoption.
For the second. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion carried. We'll move right into our 305 item and State Auditor's Office regarding the performance audit on tuition waivers and student stipends at the university system. Mr. Wall, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jason Wall with the Office of the State Auditor. You should have a copy of the performance audit. If you don't, we will bring one to you. In the interest of time, we're going to do a presentation a little bit different today. We'll use the overhead a little bit, mainly focus on the recommendations using the printed copy of the report that you have. On page one of the report, we provide information related to the motion passed by this committee for the performance audit of tuition waivers and student stipends. The motion required a review of policies and procedures related to waivers and stipends at each of the institutions, as well as a review of policies and procedures in 12 specific areas. As an overview to the report, since it is a very lengthy document, Chapter 1 contains the recommendations that we have in relation to this performance audit. All 10 recommendations are to the Board of Higher Education. Chapters 2 through 12 include information related to 9 specific areas requested by the committee. Each institution has its own chapter in those chapters 2 through 12, and it goes alphabetically. Chapter 13 provides information related to the audit, including scope and methodology, and also lists out the 12 items requested by the committee. There are 3 appendixes to the report. Appendix A includes a list of the recommendations and a checkbox as to whether or not the board agreed, disagreed, or partially agreed. Appendix B provides some additional information regarding reciprocity agreements. And then Appendix C provides additional information on residency and another way to show certain information that's included in Chapters 2 through 12. If you turn to page 2 of the report, here is where we provide definitions we established for the purpose of this audit. We do understand that there may be differences in how people may interpret certain terms and certain terminology. We had to establish definitions for the purpose of the audit as we ran into areas which were not handled consistently either between institutions or at the institutions themselves. 4 key terms throughout this audit. The first 2 we'll probably spend a little bit more time on, and that's in relation to discount and waiver. For this audit, we determined that term discount would be defined as a reduction in the tuition rate prior to the charge being applied to a student's account. A waiver, on the other hand, was a reduction in the tuition charge after being applied to a student's account and no money is received and or transferred. We classify waivers into 3 categories. The first category would be statutory waivers, which would be those that are granted pursuant to requirements in state law. The second category would be board waivers. Those are the ones that are established or provided pursuant to board policy, and the remaining waivers are given at the discretion of the institution and thus classified as institutional waivers. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd like to use the projection screens relatively quickly here to give an example in relation to the terms discount and waiver.
That's fine.
If you look at the overhead, we'll cover discount first. What you have at an institution, and this is an actual example that showed up in the fall of 2013, so the fall semester, there is a semester non-resident undergraduate tuition rate of a little over $8,000. A individual coming from Minnesota would qualify to receive a tuition being charged to their account of just under $3,500. That difference is what we classified as a discount for the purposes of this audit. Now, I'm not aware of a university system report or other information that may have been provided to legislators or to the republic, or to the public, identifying discount in such a manner. Sometimes what you're going to see, and we'll discuss more, is that waiver and discount were used interchangeably. For our purposes, we wanted to make sure it was very clear. If we said something was a discount, this is what it was. If it was a waiver, regardless of what the campus called it, we used the definition for waiver. So,
Representative Scarpa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wall, would you say that 8222 is the out-of-state rate? Is that what you would quantify that as similarly?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, correct. That's your non-resident rate. You may hear the term 267% of the resident rate. That's what that 8,222 would be.
So the 3449 is a resident rate?
The 3449 is a tuition rate that they would have been charged pursuant to the Minnesota Reciprocity Agreement.
So that's not the normal resident rate?
No.
Continue.
Taking it the next step then, that amount, that Minnesota Reciprocity Agreement amount then, goes down and hits a student's account. That's what that student from Minnesota would have been charged. So if you look at their customer account, you would not see that 267% rate. you would see this $3,449. That's what an individual would have been charged. If they had a reduction in tuition, no money involved, they simply reduced the rate that was charged, that's what the institution was expected to collect from that student. That reduction right there is what we classified as a waiver. So if you hear me use the term discount, it was in relation to the first slide. Waiver, there's a charge applied to the account, it's reduced with no money either being received by the institution or a transfer of funds within the institution, such as an institutional scholarship. There's a lot of different terms that fall into that category, waiver, but you're only going to hear me for the most part use the term discount and waiver, regardless of what a campus may or may not have called it. For the purposes of our audit, that's what we established. Gets a little bit smaller here, but it puts those first two slides together. In the four-year period that we had, starting with the academic year of 2010-11 and the subsequent three, so over a four-year time period, we identified over $420 million of discounts in the four academic years. That amount is not an amount that is going to show up in any accounting that takes place in relation to the universities or the colleges. It's just an amount that we took using whatever their a specific institution's non-resident rate was, if they had it, and it was different than what they were actually charged.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Scarpo.
Very quickly, can we get these slides so we don't need to try to take notes of all this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, absolutely. Brady, or sorry, Brady, I said it for the second time. Mike has the presentation and could probably email it to you, or we certainly could.
That'd be fine. Thank you.
Who receives discounts? It's available to individuals from over 20 states and two provinces. The waiver amount we identified in the 4 years was approximately $130 million. What that $120 million waived was approximately 12% of the tuition that was charged. 2% of that $130 million was a direct result of requirements within state law. You had 32% of the waivers granted to resident students, and 48% of those tuition waivers went to graduate and professional students, so approximately half. If there are no questions in relation to that slide, I'll just leave that up there and jump back into the report.
Fine. Continue. Representative Hawk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wall, I might be missing something, but that doesn't add up to 100%. Are we missing the classification?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, sorry for the confusion. That won't. It's three different sets of information exclusive of each other.
Okay.
Those three bullets are.
That's not intended to equal 100% of the $130 million.
Correct.
Okay.
On the bottom of page two, you'll see two other definitions we established for the purpose of the audit. One relates to stipend, the other relates to internship. On page three of the report, we begin a discussion related to no common definition of discount, waiver, and stipend. In this section of the report, we do discuss the differences related to terminology of discount and waiver. We identify the fact that discounts under our definition could be rather significant at those institutions that have that 267% non-resident tuition rate, and at other institutions your discount amount may be zero due to the fact that they have the same tuition rate for resident and non-resident students. For example, at Minot State University, we have no discount amounts as the university has only one tuition rate, which they charge all undergraduate students. On the flip side of that, you have institutions such as UND and NDSU who have a non-resident rate of 267%, and we do identify significant discount amounts at those two institutions. Based on our review and discussions with university system representatives, It's apparent to us the expectation is very few, if any, students will ever pay that 267% rate that the board has approved. We also discuss in this section information related to tuition waivers at institutions being applied to non-tuition charges such as fees or room and board charges. This could impact the amount reported for institution when tuition waiver reports were generated. For example, we did identify over $750,000 in tuition waivers in the 4 years was not reported for UND in the tuition waiver reports. This was due to UND choosing to allow the tuition waiver to apply to non-tuition charges.
Mr. Chairman, I got a question here on... Go back up on top, you know, on that second paragraph. So what you're saying is basically everybody's is a resident of the state that wants to go to higher ed, regardless of their residency, is what you're saying basically. What are other states, are they doing the same, is this just the practice across the country, or is other states actually classifying residents and non-residents?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, higher education does classify their students as resident and non-resident, and what you qualify for follows the requirements within state law in regards to what is a resident student for tuition purposes. If you don't meet that long list, which is included in Appendix C, you're classified as a non-resident. We do break that out to international as well in certain cases, but even at Minot, where you have one tuition rate charged to students either graduating from a high school in North Dakota or possibly coming from Montana, while they're charged the one rate, Minot still tracks them as coming from out of state. So it's the same tuition rate charged, but they do track them within the system, so you are able to identify what would be classified as that resident student versus a non-resident student.
But they're still getting the state subsidized. I mean, what the state kicks into the higher education, they're getting that regardless of classification.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that would be correct. The board has approved certain institutions to charge one rate regardless of where those undergraduate students would be coming from outside of international kids at two of those three.
So it really doesn't matter whether you're the, see, that's what I guess is what I'm getting at. It really doesn't matter if you're a resident in North Dakota. The North Dakota taxpayers picking up the non-resident tuition regardless of what.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I believe my answer is yes, and I would even point to the slide to show that you have a student from out of state that we expected to collect less than $370 on.
So the taxpayers.
Representative Scarpa.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason, how many people did you find that paid the 8222?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the purpose of the audit was not to get into the payment of these. What I can tell you is we ran certain data. And I believe at NDSU for a semester you were looking at less than 10 students who actually paid that full 267% rate. That's a UND rate, it's fairly close, but it is very few.
Continue.
And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the one thing I should have mentioned and forgot to mention, when we look at that waiver amount, when that is reduced at $3,080, higher education has to make up that reduction either through charging higher tuition rates, they're getting more additional general funds, or they're using other funding sources within the campus, in this case local funds. Moving on, bottom of page 3, top of page 4, we talk about information related to tuition waivers at institutions. We give an example at Wahpeton, where Wahpeton has a reduction in tuition for non-residents living in a residence hall on campus. Wahpeton applies the applicable out-of-state tuition to a student's account, and if they are living in a residence hall and have a meal plan, Wahpeton will reduce that tuition charge down to the resident rate. For 2 years in our time period, that reduction was in the tuition waiver reports. for the last 2 years of our time period, it wasn't included in the tuition waiver reports. We classified that reduction as a waiver. In the middle of page 4 is the first recommendation, and it is to the board to establish common definitions within the university system for discounts, waivers, and stipends. Once this is established, the board needs to require the campuses to review coding of discounts, waivers, and stipends to ensure that they are set up correctly and consistently with that definition that is to be applied across higher education. The board's response is they agree and will establish common definitions. The next section of the report relates to criteria for waivers. Board policy states institutions may adopt procedures providing for the waiver of tuition and fees. The policy identifies how the waiver authority is to be used. In our limited review of information, we did identify certain waivers granted appeared to be in non-compliance with the board intent for providing a waiver. For example, UND established a giveaway promotion available for students attending an athletic event on campus. We also identified institutions were granting waivers when no policy or procedure appeared to be established. Recommendation 1-2 is on the top of page 5, and it is for the board to require institutions to establish policies and procedures for those institutional waivers. We identify areas that should be addressed by the policies and procedures, such as eligibility, selection criteria, and monitoring. The board's response is they agree and will establish a template to assist campuses.
Chairman?
The
Representative Scarpo.
Just out of curiosity, what was the waiver granted at UND for attending an athletic event?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, our understanding of the giveaway promotion was a way to try to increase attendance at a basketball game. So if you were a student, you came to the basketball game, your name got thrown into a hat or however they identified them, somebody got drawn and was lucky enough to receive a tuition waiver of around $2,500.
So one person got a tuition waiver as a result?
For that promotion giveaway, yes. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the next three recommendations are related to policy recommendations for the board to consider. In the interest of time, I'd probably skip ahead to the bottom of page 7, where we talk about limits on tuition waivers. While the board has provided authority to institutions to grant tuition waivers, the board has not established a limit on the amount of institutions can waive. No limit exists related to a total dollar amount, a percent of the total tuition charged, or a limit for resident and non-resident waivers, or for undergraduate and graduate waivers. We did note NDSU waived less than 10% of undergraduate tuition charged, and on the flip side, they had over 70% of graduate tuition charge waived. On page 8 is recommendation 1-6. And that is for the board to establish limits on the waivers institutions can award. The board's response was they agree, and implementation of a new tuition model that has provisions impacting waivers is on hold until the end of the current legislative session. I would skip ahead to page 9 to discuss data consistency. We did identify inconsistencies with the student data being entered into the system. In 2013, a number of issues related to data inconsistencies were identified in a report that was done by university system representatives. We identified no data entry standards required to be followed by all institutions. What we did see were certain guidelines being established, but with no requirement for the campuses or the institutions to follow those requirements, the guidelines are what they are, guidelines. There is a policy that has been established putting the responsibility for consistent and quality data entry on every NDUS employee. From the auditor's office standpoint, a policy that's phrased in this manner makes it very difficult to hold someone accountable in relation to the student data. In our discussions with university system representatives, they did indicate only the institutions themselves can change the student data. So if problems are identified, the institutions must make changes, and making the changes may not be a high priority by the institution. On the top of page 10 is the recommendation to improve data entry consistency, and that is for the board to provide authority to an individual to identify the necessary student data, authorize that individual to establish standards related to consistent student data entry, and then require all institutions to follow those established standards. The board's response was that they agreed.
Mr. Chairman, on this one here, is there any follow-up on this planned? Because, you know, that's been one of the things. There's other things that they agree to but never seem to follow through on. Is there any follow-up planned on this?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, approximately 18 to 24 months after today, we will go in and do an audit follow-up and report back to the committee in regards to the 10 recommendations, whether they've been implemented or not.
Representative Scarpa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to student data, it's my understanding in most states, when student data is provided to iPads, to the system office and then to iPads, that it's then locked and the institution cannot change that data after that. Is that the case in North Dakota?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we did not look at the information that was submitted to iPads. We only looked back at the data that was maintained by the university system. Very quickly, Mr. Chairman, I'll say the next section relates to monitoring compliance. As probably most of you know here in the room, there is a lack of monitoring of requirements within higher education. Our office has made recommendations in relation to this in the past. We make the same recommendation here in regards to that the board needs to ensure that there is adequate monitoring of the institution's compliance with policies, procedures, and standards. On page 11 is the last section and the last recommendation in this report relating to internships. This was an area specifically requested by the committee. What I'm going to tell you very quickly is the internship data, we're not sure how many internships are within higher ed. Higher ed isn't sure how many internships there are within higher ed. There is no consistent tracking of that information currently. Roughly, we received 5 different data sets from the university system, worked with them to try to get the data where we could have some assurance, accurate and completeness. We weren't able to get to that point. The last data set had around 48,000 internships in the 4 years. I'm not going to give you any assurance that number is remotely close. It could be. We're not sure. There's 2 state programs that are we compared the data that we had to look at. Part of the request from this committee is how many of those internships then were supported by state money. The 2 we looked at were through Department of Commerce and OMB. Out of that 48,000, it appeared to be about 299 of them were being supported with state funds through those 2 programs.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
Oh,
I got Senator Lee. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, we've been very interested in internships in our behavioral health and health workforce issue studies in the last 2 or 3 years. And what we've learned is that there aren't enough internships at this point for all of the people who complete the academic courses for particular functions. I'll use licensed addiction counselors as an example of a great need in the state, with 17 students who graduated from the university system with the academic classwork all completed. There were 8 internship slots available. Obviously, what happens then is those folks go out of state for other internship opportunities and they probably don't come back. It seems to me this may be not a part of the audit process here, but we need to be aware of the fact, and the university system needs to be aware of the fact, that I think it's their responsibilities to find internship opportunities in North Dakota for everybody who's graduating from a North Dakota university, particularly in these areas of workforce shortage. Part of it has to do with excuse me, with reimbursement. The Commerce Department's Operation Intern is a match program in which employers, let's say it's mechanical engineering, an engineering firm will agree to take an intern. They get some compensation from the state through this program. The intern is also compensated, and the state shares in the compensation for that intern and gets a stipend themselves. In the healthcare careers, it is impossible to do it that way because most of them are either working for not-for-profits or have limited reimbursement through third-party providers. And so that's a critical difference that we need to address. But I wanted to use this opportunity to tell the group here about that experience with the internships and the fact that I think there's a real need that we have to keep an eye on and encourage the system to provide enough internship opportunities for the students who are graduating, particularly in those workforce shortage areas and not finding they have places to do their internships.
A point well taken, Senator Lee. Representative Kempovich.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask, well, we've gotten through these because we've got some guardianship interns in OMB that we've been dealing with, and it looks like you're able to track them because they're going through state agencies, but how come, like, out of the 48,000, you're not really able to, what is it, at department level, that you can't track them because the universities aren't tracking? You know, is it there's no funnel, basically, or no gathering of information that is at a low level, department level type internships?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the internship data at higher education, there is no consistency. There is no definition of even what an internship is or what is not an internship. For example, when we first asked for internship data, we identified NDSU had provided courses associated with cooperative education as internships. UND has cooperative educations, yet they didn't provide that information in our request for internship. So part of the issue is that internship, and there is some grayness in relation to internship, I would say as well, which is why that recommendation on the next page is made, to try to create some consistency so if you ask for internships, it at least has a common definition at a starting point in regards to this. The other problem we ran into is there's not an internship course number consistently used from campus to campus. Campuses were not following the requirements for, there's a requirement for course numbering. Not all campuses were following that requirement, and thus you had internships scattered throughout their course information. So to gather internship numbers as the way the system is set up right now almost got to be an impossible project for us, and the computer people, I would say, the SITS individuals we worked with and a couple of campus personnel, I think, made a very good effort to assist us and try to collect the information. Under the way that it is structured right now, I don't believe it really can be identified.
Mr. Chairman and committee, well, we had some information earlier on some of these internships, and some of the required hours kind of constituted slave labor on some of they were required. No, you know, there was, they were getting experience, but there was no funds or anything available, you know, to fund them, and they were doing it pretty much for nothing. And that was one of the things, that's why I was wondering, you know, out of some of these, I'm sure they're falling into that category, and that's why I was just curious about it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason, were you able to figure out whether or not there were paid internships? Were they all unpaid? I mean, could you get any idea of what the practices were? And I'm not wanting any cumulative numbers, but can you define the differences somewhat for us?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, short answer, no. Okay. There's no tracking, and we said an internship under our definition, usually it took place out of the classroom setting. It wasn't a faculty member that was doing this, and it had to be for credit. There are students who take internships as part of their program that don't ever take it for credit, because if you take it for credit, you got to pay the institution. You may just want that experience to be on your resume. Those would not be in this number because there's nobody tracking that information. That number would only be if you took it for some type of credit.
Mr. Chairman.
Continue.
Follow up to what Senator Lee had to say, you know, it's really disappointing that we're this, lack the information we need to make some good decisions about whether or not internships are something we should be working harder at. You know, when we can't even understand what's available and what's done and what isn't, I don't know how we could be supportive of anything. And I agree with Senator Lee that internships are important, but it's hard to support something when we can't get accurate information.
Jason, without going through the total report, do you have like a dollar amount that you could give us, say using the two larger University of North Dakota State and University of North Dakota in regards to tuition waivers that have been granted, a rough figure?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, certainly. The rest, if I can use the overhead, if that would be okay with the committee, rather than trying to thumb through the report here, you'll see that we put together a slide for each institution. I'll just very quickly go ahead to your two bigger universities. That's where you're going to see, back to that first slide, the majority of the discounts and waiver amounts are at. Starting with NDSU, not to pick on NDSU or UND, NDSU just comes first alphabetically.
They're the two largest.
Correct.
Institutions that have,
So there you see NDSU, we give you the tuition discount, we discuss information on the tuition waivers. We do give there was a request from the committee to include student stipends. So under our definition of stipend, we give you the total amount given to graduate students for stipends in the 4 years. We do provide a little bit of breakout in relation to undergraduate and graduates in regards to both NDSU and UND. I'll get into in a minute here. You can see that when it comes to undergraduates for NDSU, roughly 9% of the gross undergraduate tuition was waived. For graduate students, you can see on the towards the bottom of this slide, 71% of the graduate tuition that was charged was being waived. The other thing we noted with the graduate tuition waivers, if you received a graduate tuition waiver, it basically waived all your tuition. It waived, on average, 95% of the tuition charge. So if I am a graduate student at NDSU and I received a graduate waiver, it, for the most part, removed all my tuition that was being charged. The last item for NDSU, we did break out pharmacy, is that typically is broken out by NDSU in the reports we saw. The pharmacy is similar to the undergraduate information as far as percentages. UND, you can see their amounts, about 9% of total gross tuition was waived at UND, a little over $35 million in stipends in the four-year period. For UND, their undergraduate tuition was approximately 5% of what undergraduate students were charged was waived. Here at UND, the graduate tuition waived was approximately 30% of what was charged the graduate students. Again, of those individuals receiving a waiver, if I'm a graduate, almost 90% of it was being waived for those graduate students at UND. Last slide I'll just touch on in the interest of time here, then, are the two programs that are typically broken out for a graduate, more of the professional. It's for UND law students and the medical degree seeking students, and there's some information that's there as well. And I know there is a lot of information in chapters 2 through 12. We did provide a couple of, or a few additional tables that were in addition to the 12 items specifically requested by this committee, just for informational purposes too. You can find those in chapters 2 through 12 as well.
Representative Hoovy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason, did you find also where students received both the discount and a waiver?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we did, and provide that information in each of the chapters. Uh, do have a table on that, right? Waivers and discounts. It should be right in... Yep. So for NDSU, if you were to look on page 45, you would have the table that the students receiving tuition discounts and tuition waivers. UND would be on the top of page 52.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scarpa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason, in your discussions with the institutions, did you get a sense for what their real expectation was as to the 267%? I mean, I guess I'm of the opinion that they believe that number should be reduced. I mean, were there any discussions about what they thought that appropriate percentage should be of a resident rate to be realistic? Because I don't think they believe 267 is realistic, otherwise they wouldn't be given those discounts.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I would say our discussions with the campuses in relation to the 267% were brief. But I think across higher education, the belief is the 267% amount may have outlived its time. I know there was a discussion when we presented to the audit committee, and even before that, where the 267% even came about, or how this 267% came to be. There are some discussions and, you know, the belief that if you're able to show parents or even the students that this is what we could have charged you, but this is what we're going to charge you, may entice them to come to the campus. But I think, for no offense to any car salesman, since we have a former one on the audit team, it's really a car salesman mentality. You have a sticker price, and you have what you're actually going to be charged. And I think there needs to, probably should be a discussion in relation to what is it that we want to be doing in relation to the tuition model within higher education.
Senator Lee.
We could have an interesting chat about the way prescription drugs are priced too, but that doesn't fit in this LAFRC meeting. But I wanted to add one additional point about the paid versus the unpaid internships. I had a 12-month unpaid internship in my degree from UND, and it was a learning experience. I provided some, I guess, free labor at a certain level once I got more skilled in my laboratory work. But there also were responsibilities for the person who was teaching me how to do it so I didn't kill some patient. So I don't view it as slave labor. I think it's a learning experience, but it depends on the career, whether or not it can be paid or unpaid. And in visiting with Senator Anderson, who was, as you know, the director of the Board of Pharmacy for a long time, that's an example of some of the questions that we've had about this internship stuff and the paid versus unpaid and the student loan and enrollment and whether it's a part of the curriculum. Part of the rub for these licensed addiction counselors is when it's an unpaid internship, they don't have to pay tuition. However, they also don't qualify for student loans, which is why one of the bills that is working its way through both houses called for a student loan pool for them because they don't have access to student loans. However, in the meantime, we've encouraged the board to rewrite their curriculum requirements so that the clinical experience, as it would be called then, would be part of the curriculum, and they would qualify for student loans, however, then they would be paying tuition. That's part of the complexity of this whole thing. Pharmacists used to be a paid internship. They are now part of the curriculum, and it's called clinical experience. And some are paid and some are not. It ends up being negotiated with the pharmacy who is hosting the student. I thought it was important to have a little background on that so you can see there's more to it than saying somebody's getting slave labor, because even in the Wall Street Journal said articles about the pressure to have salaries for interns and what a pressure is going to put on the number of internships that are going to be made available. There are some market pressures there as well. But that's part of the complexity of this internship issue. I'd be delighted if we could get our arms around it, but there's more to it than just paying or not paying. Part of it has to do with the accessibility of student loans also.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee at this point? If not, we'll... Thank you, Jason, and good report, and we'll have comments from someone from the university system.
Jerome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Laura Glatt with the North Dakota University System. I'm sorry the chancellor had to leave to attend to a family emergency, so I'm not sure if he had any prepared comments. We are just here for any questions. Our responses have been covered by Mr. Wall in the report, and you can see, by and large, the State Board of Higher Ed Audit Committee took a very favorable approach to responding to the questions and has asked us to move ahead with implementation of the recommendations as outlined.
Okay, thank you. And any questions for Ms. Glatt from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I just think there's an awful lot of information in this audit, and I'm not sure that we shouldn't have a further discussion of it at the next meeting. So, I mean, it's just, it's too much to comprehend in this short time with everything else that's on the mind of all of us. So I would ask that the committee consider putting it on the agenda for the next meeting as well.
We, you know, it's one of the bigger audits that we've, you know, looked at during the interim, and good suggestion, give us time to go through the packet that we've received, and at our next meeting we can pick it up again and discuss it further and have the Jason here and members from the university system at that time, if there are questions, can respond at that time. So that will be what we will move forward with. So,
Chairman?
Representative Scarpo.
Mr. Chairman, I advised you that I was going to have some thoughts for the committee, and I had the legislative council put these motions together, and I think if you read through them, you can understand them. But I'm going to make these motions, one and then the other, and ask this committee to vote on them. And as we have in the past, there was a motion made to do audits of the foundations at UND, NDSU, and performance audits, and to do the Dickinson State University analysis based on a complementary type situation with the work that's been done by the Attorney General. Not necessarily go back and redo everything that's been done, but to rather just try to complement that work. So my motion would be, as stated on the sheet that I handed out, you know, to move that when Section 54-10-01, as amended by the Senate Bill 2004, as approved by the 64th Legislative Assembly, becomes effective, the Performance Audit Division of the State Auditor's Office conduct a performance audit of the foundations at the University of North Dakota, North Dakota State, and Dickinson State for fiscal years 2012, 13, and 14. And what that means is that the language that's in the auditor's bill does authorize the auditor's office to do this. So when that law becomes effective, that they could commence that work, and I would make that motion.
We have a motion. Do we have a second on the floor?
Second.
We have a second. Further discussion? Senator Lee.
Mr. Chairman, I opposed this last time, and I will now as well. In the first place, I think it is an intrusion, and I support the law as it currently is. But the other thing is, particularly on the Dickinson State Foundation, it's in receivership. How much more auditing can be done? I mean, honestly, there isn't much more that we can add to the process over and above what's already being done for something that is being currently addressed. So I oppose this motion.
Representative Maribos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Use your mic, please.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, Mr. Chairman. I'm still kind of puzzled as to what we would do with the information on the foundations and what we would hope to accomplish once we got that information. I'm not sure if Representative Scarpo could kind of illuminate me a little bit on, you know, what it is that we, what kind of control we have over foundations. It would help me.
Representative Scarpo, you want to respond to that question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to. I think it is very apparent there's a large amount of distrust in the air with regard to higher education. Warranted or unwarranted, there's a lot of distrust. And some of that distrust is caused by the fact that there is this entity out there that has the ability to remain anonymous. And very honestly, you know, I don't have an issue with whatever is being done legitimately, I don't care. But if there are things that aren't exactly legitimate, I believe we should know that. And what a performance audit does is take a look at them, because they are attached at the hip to these universities, and the president of one of the institutions at least has stated publicly that he spends about a third of his time raising money for that foundation. And we as taxpayers pay his salary, or at least some portion of it. And if in fact a foundation is paying a larger portion of his salary than we are, then maybe what he's doing is absolutely appropriate. I don't know. We don't know. And I'd like to reestablish trust so that there could be a more harmonious relationship than there exists today.
Representative Trotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I first heard about this at the last meeting, I was not concerned, but I thought about it on the way home, that if you get a notice that the IRS is going to audit you, you're not very happy about it. But if you've got nothing to hide, there's no problems. So for any of the institutions or anybody that's being audited, I don't believe they probably have any concerns about it, because they've got nothing to hide. The other thing is, I'll bet you Dickinson wished they would have had an audit done 4 or 5 years ago. Thank you.
Senator Lee. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say that I've given gifts on many occasions, actually, to foundations. And my anticipation when I give to a foundation, including some North Dakota University System foundations, more than one, I expect my money to be used for whatever the purpose is for which it was given, whether it is for a general scholarship fund or something specific. It really concerns me that we will be looking at auditing and requiring, the big deal really is, not that I were worried about their hiding something, but I think it's awful that we will be expecting the foundations to pay for the cost of a performance audit because they're using donor money. And unless you figure out a way, and maybe Representative Scarpo has figured it out, for the foundations not to have to pay the cost of their own performance audit, I think it's an unfair intrusion onto donor dollars that were given with the idea that scholarships or other certain purposes would be met, that I would really be resentful if my money ended up going for that, and yet they don't have a choice if that's what goes forward.
Any other comments? Representative Gunnersberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my main problem with this is, where do we stop? Right now, we're picking out three foundations of higher education. So who's next in higher education? And then, if it's because that there are public dollars going to these, how about nonprofits next? And are we just going to pick and choose who we're going to audit, and then make them pay for it? And if that's the road we want to go down, I think we can have that discussion. I think performance audits of, where we spend our public dollars are okay, but I think we're opening a door that could have pretty wide consequences.
Is there any comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kennedy.
It gets pretty interesting, and I know over the years there's been where outside monies come into these institutions, and it's been a concern of mine that who's the master and who's the puppet in these. And it does get to be concerning, because you got the two bigger ones are over $1 billion in those foundations. Dickinson, you found out that there was local people that were deciding where donor money was going, not necessarily where the donors wanted it to go. And that's been brought out. I don't know if that's, an audit to probably bring out any more. I think it'd just keep it in front of the assembly, or keep it in front of us anyways. But, that's one of the problems that I see with higher education is the master and the puppet. And it's been where the state of North Dakota kicks in about a third, a little more, of our money, and then you got tuition money, and then you got the foundation money, and it gets concerning. of what's going on here. And I don't have a problem with this. Like it was said earlier, if they got nothing to hide, they got nothing to hide.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Scarpo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to Senator Lee's concerns about the cost, I would ask that Mr. Wall be allowed to address that and the assessment of a contractor or whatever.
Step forward and...
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, in relation to performance audits, our office does not charge for a performance audit. Similar to the report that you have in front of you for the tuition waivers, there is no bill sent from our office to higher education to pay for this type of audit.
Okay. Thank you. Any further comments? If not, we're going to have the clerk call the roll. We do have a motion and a second. Everybody has the proposed motion in front of you, so we'll call the roll.
Representative Sherman Crape?
Yes.
Welter? Delzer? Goldisberg?
No.
Hattestad?
Yes.
Kelch? Kepenick? Larigos? Martinson? Locke?
No.
Nelson? Pollard?
Yes.
Ruby?
Yes.
Schmidt? Scarpa?
Yes.
Trotter?
Yes.
Senators Kelzer?
Aye.
Lee?
No.
O'Connell? Logic? Mr. Chairman, the motion passed.
Motion carried. And move on to the second motion.
Thank you, Mr.
Scarpo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In trying to review the space utilization study that was done by for higher education as a result of the $1 million that we have invested, I found it rather difficult to get into some type of readable form. And because of that, I forwarded it to the state auditor's office, and I asked them about doing some work on it and trying to bring it back to us in some type of format that was much more understandable and meaningful. So the motion would be, again, pursuant to the, you know, Section 54-10-1, the Performance Audit Division of the State Auditor's Office, to conduct a performance audit of the space utilization study, and you can read all the rest. I don't need to read all the rest, and I would make that motion.
Second.
Second.
Right. With motion and second. Discussion. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for Representative Scarpo, I guess. Why a performance audit, and why not, if we need somebody to delineate the information for me, isn't that something that legislative council or possibly somebody at the Office of Higher Ed could do for us instead of having a performance audit of a study? In fact, I've never heard of that before.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Guggisberg, it's because of the complexity of it, and obviously I'd like to, I believe it's appropriate that we have a third party take a look at it to give it some independence, and that would be the State Auditor's Office. And we could ask Legislative Council to do it. I don't necessarily disagree, but I'm not sure they have the same characteristics in doing so.
Further discussion? Corey? Now we'll call, I have the clerk call the roll.
Representative Chairman Crape?
Yes.
Welter? Guggisberg?
No.
Hattestad?
Yes.
Kelch?
Yes.
No. Kepenick? Larigos? Mock?
Yes.
Nelson?
No.
Pollard?
Aye.
Ruby?
Yes.
Scarpo?
Yes.
Trotter?
Yes.
Senators Kelzer?
Aye.
Lee?
No.
Mr. Chairman, the motion passed.
Motion passed. asked, we have one other request, and Representative Hattelstead, I pass that around, everybody should have a copy of it, and we'll let you explain it.
Mr. Chairman, we had a bill come before us in political subdivision requesting these two audits. I said that it was not necessary that we had a committee that dealt with this type of thing, and I said that I would see that they would be presented to this committee for consideration. I led the fight to kill the bill both in committee and on the floor, but I did promise that I would bring this to the committee for consideration, so I would move both studies.
We have a motion and a second. Second. We have a second. Further discussion. Senator Lee.
Mr. Chairman, can we ask the auditors department to let us know what their workload is? Because in our last meeting, we found that they were really booked out on the performance audit side.
Jason?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I believe at the time we were in front of the committee during session, we were working on the tuition waiver report. From our standpoint, that audit is done. We did start certain background work in regards to this committee's request for a performance audit on the Department of Trust lands. So that will take us over the next few months, if not longer, in relation to that project. Following that, we do have some follow-ups we need to get to. My understanding is now we have two new audits to do after that time period. So right now I would say we're booked out a minimum of three performance audits, so we're probably looking around 18 to 20 months worth of possible work for us, depending on what we run into in those projects.
And if I remember correctly, I think we did a audit of the health department, I think that ended in June of 2013, if I'm not correct. So would they be in line again for an audit by the time you get there, possibly, anyway?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the health department, I would suspect, was their audit every 2 years. So they would be up again, you know, in that time period for their operational audit. And there could be consideration in relation to the information in that was being looked at that could be considered possibly as part of that audit.
Okay. So, Representative Hattelstead, would that, in regards to that particular performance audit, would that satisfy your request, or do you want to make sure we vote on it here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I would like it voted on here.
Okay.
Basically, the health department, we're talking simply about, and it's not a simple audit, obviously, but we are concerned only with the oil and gas development rules and regulations to see how that's being handled. So that may be included. Easy to include.
It'd be on the record.
I would have no problem with that.
Representative Scarpo.
Mr. Chairman, if there's a possibility of narrowing the focus of these, you know, within the health department, within oil and gas, I'm wondering if Representative Hattelstead would bring back language to the next meeting that would nail it to where we could better understand what it is that they're expected to do. And in the meantime, they're not going to get to these anyway. Is that a possibility?
Representative Hattelstead.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, I think I can arrange that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kubinich.
And Representative Hattelstead, like on, because it, you know, reading it is like on the oil and gas division, when it's all rules and policy, you mean from just from the start to finish, or is it mostly how they're doing flaring or their oil conditioning, or is it any one thing, or is it everything, or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kempinich, I think it's an overview. We want to know what the rules and policies are, and what's being done, how it's being done, what's being done. We've seen some spills and things of that nature. What's your policy in dealing with that? What's being done? What's the follow-up? So I guess it's kind of a basic overview and then becoming more specific.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think probably should, you know, because I'd have to resist right now on these and I don't have a problem basically, but I think when you put in, including review of all rules, I think you should all orders, rules, and policies, because orders are more of their operating mode of action than rules. They don't make many rules, they make orders. So I think you'd have to include that in if you wanted to really get into how they work.
Okay. I will take a vote on part two of the requested studies.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think this should be somewhat narrowed down as well. I mean, there's all kinds of waste in the industry, and I deal not necessarily with oil field waste, but several different types. As far as following the rules, boy, they sure remind me of them any time I have an inspection. And so I don't know what we would be looking to find. I know there's been some concerns about changing the administrative rules, which is, you know, the part of their process that they do, and then they would be following that. So I'm going to resist this one because I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. We do have a motion and a second. Yes, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I guess I've had some experience in this, and I have to think that the audits are at least somewhat necessary. I followed one well where an oil and gas inspector noted that a flare wasn't lit, which is a rather serious violation. 3 years went by, there was no re-inspection, no violations were ordered or anything. I started following it personally. It was on a spill site that was repeatedly visited by members of both the health department and the oil and gas division. No violations. The flare was not lit. And only when I personally complained to the head of the health department did they then act. And here it was, a serious health violation that was noted in a departmental violation years earlier with no follow-up. We get into the same sort of thing with the interaction of the two. For instance, part of the problem is the health department, while they have these rules and their standards, have no field inspectors. There is no one will go to a site and see, you know, the flare ended up being a health department issue, but they have no one assigned to go around and see if flares, for instance, are lit or to inspect anything for health violations. So only if a member of the public would call and complain would they react. Now, I know that members of the public did call repeatedly and complain, but they called repeatedly and complained to the oil and gas division. And those complaints were not only not forwarded, those people were not told that they should be calling the health department. So there's an interaction here, and there is some serious problems out there which are threatening people's lives. And I don't know exactly how to narrow it or how broad it needs to be, but I know that there's problems out there threatening people. And I think we have to get started, even if it's like higher ed where we do one audit and we learn something and then we move on with another one. I really think we need to get started with this because it's serious and it's not working. So I'm going to support the motion.
No, in the health department budget that is being worked on right now, I know there are additional environmental specialists that are being hired and added there, so I would hope, you know, that, you know, would help some of the concerns that we have here in this situation. So, any further discussion? We'll call the roll.
Representative Sherman Craig?
No.
Belter?
No.
Lugesberg? Hattelstead?
Yes.
Kelsch?
Yes.
Kepenick?
No.
Locke?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Pollard?
No.
Ruby?
No.
Scarpo?
No.
Cottier?
No.
Summers Kilzer?
No.
Lee? Mr. Chairman, the motion failed.
Okay. Any other information or discussion to bring before the committee before we adjourn?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to acknowledge that the roll would say that I was in attendance because I missed the roll call. I was at a conference committee.
We made note of it. Thank you. We stand adjourned.
Good job, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Bring this forward.
Oh, that's what it is.
We had one of these and Judy got going. I just love it. Okay, I make a motion.